Tonight's reading is from Zechariah, starting in chapter 12, verse 10, to chapter 13, verse 9. And it's on page 965 in your church Bible. That's Zechariah chapter 12, verse 10, page 965. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and pleas for mercy, so that when they look on me, on him whom they have pierced, they shall mourn for him as one mourns for an only child, and weep bitterly over him as one weeps over a firstborn. On that day, the mourning in Jerusalem will be as great as the mourning for Hadad-Rimmon in the plain of Megiddo. The land shall mourn, each family by itself, the family of the house of David by itself, and their wives by themselves, the family of the house of Nathan by itself, and their wives by themselves, the family of the house of Levi by itself, and their wives by themselves, the family of the Shimeites by itself, and their wives by themselves, and all the families that are left, each by itself, and their wives by themselves. On that day there shall be a fountain opened for the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to cleanse them from sin and uncleanness. And on that day, declares the Lord of hosts, I will cut off the names of the idols from the land, so that they shall be remembered no more. And also I will remove from the land the prophets and the spirit of uncleanness. And if anyone again prophesies, his father and mother who bore him will say to him, You shall not live, for you speak lies in the name of the Lord. And his father and mother who bore him shall pierce him through when he prophesies. On that day, every prophet will be ashamed of his vision when he prophesies. He will not put on a hairy cloak in order to deceive, but he will say, I am no prophet. I am a worker of the soil, for a man sold me in my youth. And if one asks him, What are these wounds on your back? He will say, The wounds I received in the house of my friends. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, against the man who stands next to me, declares the Lord of hosts. Strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. I will turn my hand against the little ones. In the whole land, declares the Lord, two-thirds shall be cut off and perish, and one-third shall be left alive. And I will put this third into the fire, and refine them as one refines silver, and test them as gold is tested. They will call upon my name, and I will answer them. I will say, They are my people, and they will say, The Lord is my God.
Katie, thank you very much for reading for us. Do keep that open on page 965. I nearly had it put on the notice sheet, but I didn't find it in time. I wonder if you've seen that picture that... I can hear my voice now. You've not heard what I've said so far? No, you have. No, jolly good. I suddenly heard myself become loud, and I wasn't sure if you'd been just sitting politely waiting for me to start. You're very polite. Thank you for that. Have you seen that picture that you can look at sort of one way and see an old sort of ugly hag, an old ugly woman... Or you can look at another way and see a beautiful young lady. Do you know what I mean? A few nods. It's the same picture, and both pictures are within it, and people see it different ways, and you get them talking to each other, and they say, no, it's a beautiful lady, and no, it's an ugly old hag, and no, that's her chin, no, those are her eyes, etc. They're trying to describe these two different things they are seeing. They're both there in the drawing, the sort of ugly and the beautiful together. Well, this evening we're going to look at something which is rather like that, simply in the fact that at the same time we are going to see something which is terribly, terribly ugly, and yet at the same time wonderfully beautiful. To put it rather bluntly, we're going to see how ugly we are. There we are. And we are going to see how wonderfully beautiful and amazing God is. In the same event, at the same time, we see those two things. Now, it may help you to find your notice sheet again and turn over to the back, and you'll find you've got an outline there which just shows you where we're going. Let's start with number one, where God... Really, point number one is simply the statement, we're going to be quite brief about it, that God promises to act, to bring about what he calls his kingdom. Now, we've said this a few times from Zechariah. We didn't have chapter 12, 1 to 9 read, but briefly put, God says, I will bring my kingdom. What that means in practice is, first of all, he will destroy his enemies. He will remove his enemies. Do you remember last week we talked about Jimmy? Jimmy, who was a fictitious Jew living at the time of Zechariah. And we thought, how will Jimmy be finding what Zechariah is saying? Well, Jimmy, what spoilt life for Jimmy was God's enemies. The enemies that kept on invading the land and ruining their life. God is saying, I'm going to remove your enemies. So verse 3, for instance, on that day I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will surely hurt themselves. They'll come against Jerusalem and find they can't beat her. Verse 9, on that day I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. God will remove enemies. Well, to put it slightly more broadly, because this is perhaps sounds maybe a bit vague to us, what God is saying is, I'm going to remove everything that ruins life. Everything that spoils life. See, everything that spoils life comes from the fact we've rejected God. So everything that spoilt your week or your day, from a hurt relationship to a bad situation in the office or whatever it is, it's all come from the fact that we reject God. And God says, I will remove that. I will remove people who are against me. I'll wipe it away so nothing will spoil life anymore. And then to put it positively, the second subheading there, God's people and city will be perfected. So verse 7, and the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. He's going to save his people and glorify them. He's going to make them all they're meant to be. And the rest of the passage describes God protecting them and strengthening them and blessing them. If we turn over the page, you get a similar, we get something slightly more specific. At the end of chapter 13, this is where, this again is a description of God's kingdom. 13 verse 9. They will call on my upon my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God. That captures being in relationship with God, where God is your God and you are his people. It sort of captures what runs through the whole Bible. What it's all about is a relationship with God, an intimate and profound and wonderful relationship with God. Again, that's something Jimmy longed for. He knew he'd been made for a relationship with God. He knew that in this relationship God would bless you and look after you and fulfill you and give you everything from sort of good wine and food to family and children and happiness and fulfillment. Everything good in life would come from this. So you see, that's God's kingdom. Everything bad in life taken away, everything good in life perfected. It's a perfect world God is talking about. That is what he's promising to bring. That is what is on offer. Life in God's kingdom, life in this world which is just perfect and everything we want it to be. That's what's on offer. How is it going to come about? That is the real question in this passage. How is this going to come about? Well, let's go on to point 2 and verse 10 of chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 10. God says, I will pour out on the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and pleas for mercy, so that when they look on me, on him whom they have pierced, they shall mourn for him, as one mourns for an only child, and weep bitterly over him, as one weeps over a firstborn. Now that is quite a change from verses 1 to 9, isn't it? Verses 1 to 9 is all kind of victory and celebration and triumph. And suddenly verse 10, we've got mourning. We move to a kind of funeral scene. And everyone is mourning and crying because somebody has been pierced. The word means it's a sort of a death blow with a sword. Someone's died. And the question is, who's died? Well, verse 10, it's God speaking. So cast your eye down, I will pour out on the house of David, etc., so that when they look on me, God. It sounds like God has been struck and pierced and died. But then you carry on in that sentence, and it says, when they look on me, on him whom they have pierced, they shall mourn for him. So now it sounds like it's someone different. This person who has been pierced and died is someone who, in a sense, is God, can be associated with God, and yet at the same time is distinct from God. Now, who's that? Or who's that in Zechariah? Well, the answer we've had is probably the king. We saw last week, God's king can be associated with God. He acts for God on behalf of God. And that suspicion is confirmed, if we go to one more reference, chapter 13, verse 7, where we hear about someone else getting hit by a sword. Verse 7, awake, O sword, against my shepherd, against the man who stands next to me, declares the Lord of hosts. Well, here is someone being struck with a sword, pierced, and it's quite clear who it is this time, it is God's shepherd. And we saw last week that's another term for God's king. What Zechariah is saying is God's king is going to come, and he's going to be rejected. He's going to be killed. Now that's pretty odd, but what is really weird is who's going to kill him. I'm sorry to keep turning this page. You'll get quite used to these two verses. Let's go back to chapter 12, verse 10. Who kills God's king? And verse 10, I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and pleas for mercy, so that when they look on me, on him whom they have pierced. They, that is the house of David, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, God's people. God's king is going to be killed by his own people. Last week we imagined General Tommy Franks, leader of the coalition forces in Iraq, marching into Baghdad unarmed. And it was a picture of God's king that we saw last week, God's king coming to fight in weakness. But actually, I've realised this week that picture isn't quite right. In fact, it's rather badly wrong. I'm sorry about that. It made the point at the time, but let's correct it. In chapter 9, God's king comes to Jerusalem. He comes to his people. That's what's happening here. God's king is coming to his people. This is like General Tommy Franks marching into Washington. Unarmed. But can you imagine? He marches into Washington and out come the US citizens and they hit him and they strike him and they kill him. Well, I say, can you imagine? I mean, you can't really, can you? Because what a ridiculous thought. To kill somebody who is on your side, to kill somebody who is going to fight for you, to kill your kind of leader, that's madness. But that is what Zechariah is saying. God's king is going to come to his city, Jerusalem. He's going to come to his people, and they are going to kill him. I wonder what Jimmy, listening to Zechariah, would have thought of that. He longed for God's king to come and save them and bring in the kingdom. And now he hears God's king's going to come and we're going to kill him. It must have sounded crazy. Unbelievable. But if Jimmy, after perhaps he got over his disbelief, his initial disbelief, if he thought about it a bit harder, I can imagine him saying, well, coming to a conclusion, he'd think, God is saying, we're going to kill his king. I find that unbelievable. I don't think I'd do that. I couldn't do that. But God says I will. So what does that say about me? If I'm going to kill God's king. Killing God's king, I mean, that's what God's enemies do, isn't it? I mean, if the US citizens killed General Tommy Franks, you'd have to say, well, whose side are they on? Well, whose side is Jimmy on? That's the question he's starting to ask. Because God's saying, you will kill me, my king. Jimmy is starting to realise an awful truth about himself. He's a God killer. He will kill God's king. Actually, that is something that's true of all of us tonight. We too, left to ourselves, would kill God. This verse actually is quoted in the New Testament, and it is applied to all people. That we will see Jesus and we will mourn for piercing him. That is, we are all guilty of his death. Now, I know we don't think like that. You may be sitting there thinking, I haven't killed God. You know, I haven't done anything to God. I wouldn't do that. I couldn't do that. But let's just think about that for a minute. If we look at our lives, what is our attitude to God so easily? God speaks to us. We so easily say no to him. God's king comes to us. We so easily say no to him and ignore him. And reject him and cut him out of our lives and push him away. Now, I think it's easy for us to think that kind of no from us to God is a kind of sort of skin deep thing. Yes, well, of course we don't do what God says. Sometimes we ignore his king. But we don't think it goes that deep in us. But what Zechariah is saying is, no, that goes very deep in us. That goes right to our heart. If God, it's just that God isn't there in front of us, so we don't hit him with a sword. But we still say no. And if God just pressed a bit harder, we'd still say no. And if God pressed very hard, we'd still say no. And we would keep saying no to God until we hammer the nails in. We don't want God to rule over us. We don't want his king. We can see it in seed in our attitude, but we would go the whole way. It runs right to our heart. That is the awful truth about us. I don't know what you think the worst thing you could ever do is, or the worst thing you have done. Adultery, theft, murder. What's the worst thing you could do? What are you capable of? Well, here's the answer. Zechariah says we are capable of, in fact, we have in our hearts and minds, we do kill God. We kill his king. It's unbelievable, I know. It's unbelievably awful. But God says it's true. History says it's true. I think our lives say it's true. As you look at God's king, you see something very ugly in us. How we hate God and reject his king. However, at the same time, something else is going on here with God's king. And that is the second sub-point under number two. God's king is struck by his own God. Back to chapter 13 and verse 7. Let me read it again, verse 7. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, against the man who stands next to me, declares the Lord of hosts. God is clearly speaking, and he is calling on a sword to strike his shepherd. Awake, O sword, strike the shepherd, strike the one who stands next to me, strike my king. That's what God is saying. Well, I imagine Jimmy, if he existed, I mean, his head would be spinning now. I mean, crikey, it's one thing to say we're going to kill God's king, but to say God's going to kill his king, I mean, that just sounds, that's just crazy. I mean, if we ran with the Tommy Franks thing just a little bit further, I don't think we can. It hasn't got any legs, really. It's getting too perverted. But this is, what's this? This is George Bush killing Tommy Franks now. What's going on? Why is God killing his king? It seems crazy. It seems senseless. It is. It's peculiar. But again, if Jimmy thought about it for a bit, I think he might come to a conclusion. He might say, well, I don't understand this, but if God is killing his king, he must have his reasons. I don't understand what he's doing, but he must understand what he's doing. It looks crazy to me, but God's not crazy. He must have some sort of plan in this. He must be working in this in some way. And that is exactly what we find in the rest of the passage, that God is working through his king being struck. And what God is doing is bringing his kingdom. Let's go on with number three. God's king, pierced and struck, will bring God's kingdom. Let's see what happens, what comes from this king dying. First of all, 13 verse 1. On that day, you notice this is all on that day. There's a quite sort of beat of on that day. On that day he's pierced, on that day he's struck. Well, on that day, 13 verse 1, there shall be a fountain opened for the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to cleanse them from sin and uncleanness. When, on the day God's king is struck, a fountain will open to wash away sin, their rejection of God. I don't know if you remember, back in chapter 3, about a month ago now, of Zechariah, we had a vision of Joshua, the high priest, dressed in filthy clothes before God. And the point was, his filthy clothes were all he'd done wrong, the ways he'd rejected God. And it meant he couldn't come close to God. He couldn't come into God's kingdom. I remember as a sort of, I don't know how old I was. I'm going to make myself quite young, actually, for the sake of this story. Say I was 5. I was playing in some woods sort of near our house, and I came back absolutely filled. I don't know what I've been doing, but I was covered in mud and just sort of dripping wet. And I opened the front door, and I was about to step into the house when my mum saw me, and she said, "Oh, no, you don't. You are not coming in here like that." And she shooed me onto the front doorstep, and then, horror of horrors, she made me undress outside. I'm still scarred from the experience. But that is the sort of the point of, you're dirty, you cannot come in. Joshua, you are dirty with your rejection of God. You cannot come into God's kingdom. And then in the vision, his dirty clothes are taken away, he's given clean clothes, and God declares, I will in a single day remove the sin of this land. Well, that is what is now coming about here. Well, that's what's been described here. That's the fountain. But we are seeing how it happens. How is sin taken away? It is through the king being struck. That brings this cleansing, this wiping away. And that is what we need. That is what we desperately need, is this cleansing. A couple of weeks ago, I was looking for something on the internet when one of those sort of adverts that you're not interested in pops up. Do you know what I mean? There's little windows that suddenly appear on your screen and they're telling you about something. Where did that come from? And an advert popped up for Internet Washer Pro. And it had a little sort of kind of caption. It went roughly like this. Would you be embarrassed? Sorry, I'm going to do an advertising voice now. Would you be embarrassed if people found what you had been looking on the internet at on the internet? Internet Washer Pro can keep your computer clean. You will have the satisfaction that once you delete a file, it really will be gone. No more wondering what someone may find on your computer. Well, I'm sure a lot of us would be embarrassed if you looked at my computer and saw how often I visited the Grecian 2000 website, clicked on the link to the hair replacement therapy unit. There are plenty of other embarrassments, though, aren't there? Plenty of embarrassments. I mean, porn obviously comes to mind, such a huge problem. But no less wrong would be, what? The gossip in our emails, the materialism in our purchases. And that's only on the computer. And what about on our hearts and our minds? If that was all sort of exposed to public view, how much dirt would there be? We don't need an internet washer. We need a kind of whole life washer. All the ways we've rejected God to be washed away, never to be found again. That is what Zechariah was talking about. That is the fountain that will wash away every secret deed, every public act, everything past, present, and future, so that we stand clean in God's sight. And that is what is needed if God's kingdom's going to come. On our own, we can't live in his kingdom. We're the sort of people who would kill God. We need cleansing. If God doesn't provide this, no one will live in his kingdom. And so the extraordinary way God brings about his kingdom is through the death of his king, so he can wash people clean. And they can be in his kingdom. Anyone can be in his kingdom. But it doesn't matter what you've done or how bad it is. This fountain can cleanse you so you can be in his kingdom. But that's not all. Secondly, this king leads to our hearts being changed. 12 verse 10, again. You could probably quote it to me. Notice as I read it this time, what happens, what leads people to mourn and ask for mercy. Verse 10, I will pour out on the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and pleas for mercy, so that when they look on me, they shall mourn. See, left to themselves, God's people are hardened to their crime. They will not see the awfulness of it, but God will pour out a spirit, or more likely his spirit, which leads them to mourn, to see how terrible what they've done is, and to cry out for mercy. It's odd how often the spirit is only associated with sort of positive experiences. And often he does bring positive experiences of joy and peace. But here is a great work of the spirit to show us the awfulness of what we have done against God and to lead us to cry out for mercy and grace. Our time is ticking away, so we're not going to look at the other reference, but to say briefly, God also, by his Spirit, will change our hearts so we no longer go after sin and idols. 13 verse 2 onwards, you can look at it another time. The point is, God will act to change his people so that they see how wrong they have been, they cry out for mercy, and he leads them to obey him. And again, that is what is needed to bring in God's kingdom. It's no good if God simply cleans us and then brings us to live in his kingdom where we continue to disobey him. That's not going to be a perfect world. So God not only cleans us, he then changes us. So we see how wrong we are, we cry out for mercy, and he leads us to obey him. And that, of course, is something that happens in the Christian life. We are led to obey God day by day, and one day he will complete that work, when God's kingdom comes fully. All of it happens through the death of God's king. God's king, pierced and struck, rejected. He brings God's kingdom. He makes it possible. I mentioned at the start that picture of ugliness and beauty at the same time. Well, isn't that what we see here? God is saying that one day humankind will do their very worst against God and kill his king, the most terrible crime. But at the very same time, in the very same act, God is at work, acting to bring in his kingdom, bringing cleansing and change. We see both the terrible ugliness of human nature and yet the wonderful depth of God's love and mercy and wisdom. I've been thinking all week how we should respond to this, and then I asked myself, well, how would Jimmy respond? Having heard, if he heard this and understood it, what would he do? And I thought, well, the first thing he'd do is probably weep. He would mourn, wouldn't he? As he realizes the ugliness of his nature, how terrible he is, that he would kill God. And yet at the same time, wouldn't he just kind of gasp and just be amazed and just say, wow, as I do that, God will save me. God will bring in his kingdom through his king. I guess the same goes for us. I mean, some of us here tonight, I imagine, aren't Christians. Well, God is saying, here is the way into my kingdom, my perfect world. I don't know what you imagined the way was, but here is the way. It is it's an unexpected way. It's through an unexpected king. But the way for you is, to, first of all, to see how terrible your attitude to God is and what you've done to God is, to mourn and then to cry for mercy and receive cleansing through his king. You could do that tonight. Put a wonderful picture of it in the baptism. But you could do that tonight and ask God through his king to cleanse you. I guess the same goes for us as Christians as well. I know many of us know this. I know this is very familiar to us. We've heard it before, often. But we can always know these things more deeply. We can mourn more deeply. We can be amazed more deeply. Someone mentioned to me on the way in that Martin Lloyd-Jones, a Christian teacher, at the start of a book about Jesus' death, said this. He said, when I was young and foolish, he had begun to think he understood and had grasped Jesus' death. So now he's a bit older, he realises he's only just begun to understand it. Well, tonight I hope we understand a bit more. I hope we see a bit more of the ugliness and yet at the same time the beauty that we see in Jesus. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are such a wonderful, wonderful God, that faced with your enemies, you come in your Son and you let us kill you, and in that very act make it possible for us to be saved. Teach us these things, we pray, by your Spirit. Lead us to mourn and lead us to rejoice in Jesus Christ. And we pray in his name. Amen.